Welcome to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, the federal leader in retirement planning seminars. Join NITP this morning for an hour of plain talk on planning your future. You've got questions, they've got answers.
Welcome to For Your Benefit. We're here this morning with Dr. Michael Creedon, and we're going to talk about taking care of mom and dad, 10 commandments for caregivers. We're kind of sandwiched between two major holidays, and mom and dad certainly should be in the forefront of those to be visited and cared for. Michael is, again, a PhD, and he actually advises a major financial firm on finances for the elderly. He's a retirement planning seminar speaker. He's the chair of A.T. Still University's What is it? What's it, Michael?
Aging Studies Project.
Thank you. All these titles and all these names. Anyway, mine's short. I'm Bob Lines. I'm a CPA. Anyway, so Michael, we start off with the Ten Commandments. What's the first commandment?
Well, these are 10 commandments that I cooked up in terms of issues that people need to be responsive to when they're dealing with the aging of parents or older relatives in general. And commandment number one, as it were, is they're adults. And one of the big problems you get is, as people get older, is that adult children start telling them what to do. And, you know, your 50-year-old starts acting like, this is what you need to do, Mom. And, you know, like anybody else, you might get a little bit tired of being told what to do when you're 75 and you've done your thing for 50, 60, 70 years now. You know, we need to realize that they're in charge of their own lives, and that until they lose the capacity for making decisions for themselves, we need to treat them as adults who have the right to make their own decisions. And our job basically is to help them to have choices.
As we talk about this, you and I still have our faculties together, I suppose.
I know my wife do anyway. has some doubts about that occasionally.
All right, but doing these shows over the years, this is the eighth year of the show, it dawned on me one day, gee, the people on the mic are soon to be the people we're talking about off the mic. So what could we do now to protect ourselves in the future from not being aware?
There's a little thing called exercise. And actually, the studies, all of the studies on aging are saying that that this is probably the single most important thing we can do for ourselves to maintain our functional level and adapt to our age and as long as possible, is to have some kind of moderate exercise on a regular basis. Actually, one study in the last year, I think year and a half, done at the University of Texas and the School of Public Health there, did a longitudinal study over many years with a very large cohort of men and women that they followed and measured about 100 different health indicators during that period of time. And the final report of that study said the single most important factor in the quality of your life going forward, are you physically active? And that was like looking at 100 different health indicators. That was the one that was seen as the one you have some control over. And they weren't really talking about massive exercise. Actually, about 50% of older adults, the only exercise they do is walking. And walking can do the job. A study that was funded by NIH some years ago looked at health, exercise, and aging, and it was like 1,500 women across the nation, and they found that if women would do a mile and a half a day at 3 miles an hour, they would achieve the bulk of their exercise requirement. And if you computed a mile and a half at 3 miles an hour, that's a half an hour brisk walk. A half an hour brisk walk does the job. So, you know, this is not a heavy hit that we're asking people to take on. But that's the single most important thing you can do for your future. And the other, of course, obviously, is what are you putting into your system? So the nutrition part is important too. But the exercise part is really what they all single out as the single most important thing.
I see the serious ones 24/7, not 24/7, in the colder months and the warmer months in the malls.
Yes.
And you can see them maybe two, three, four together, and there's a number of them walking around the mall to stay out of the elements. But they're doing their...
They're walking, and I think that's terrific. So you can walk around the block a few times. Sometime during the day, that's another way of getting there.
Alrighty, your first comment, one of the first 10 commandments, was they are adults. The parents are adults, and been there, done it. Sometimes you get a little frustrated because they don't listen, or they should be thinking like us. Maybe I should say like me, which would be scary.
Well, actually, what I say to people is you got to talk to them about what you're the one with the problem. You're the one with the worry. You're the one with the bother. And can they help you to deal with this stress you're feeling about the whole thing? And in other words, you're asking them to help you instead of you're saying, like, I'm here to tell you what to do. It's you just got to reverse the language a bit. Of who's the authority around here about your life? You're the authority about your life, and can you help me to deal with my anxiety?
So that gets into point number two that you had here, that our job is really to help them make choices, and provide them with the choices and make them feel good about the choices.
Yeah, well, I mean, you're in a nursing home. There's a regime and there's a structure for the life there, but, you're going to eat Wheaties or you're going to eat Raisin Bran, or, it's just a choice. And so you try and build choices into their lives, even in circumstances like that, so that they feel they have some power left.
That's what I'm going to say. As long as they're aware of their surroundings, then they feel more empowered if they have choices. If they're not aware, then you have to pretty much do it for them.
Yeah, but I mean the point is that your job is to have some ingenuity, and your job is to try and figure out ways to enable them to manage for themselves.
Great. Well, we'll turn the phones on. We're at 202-465-3080. 202-465-3080. If you have questions for Michael regarding his area of expertise, I'm a finance and tax type, and I hope you don't – well, I hope you do call about that, but our focus really is on Michael's area. But we're going to talk a little bit about finances and what you're talking about here in a bit. But I just like to follow your script. Caregiving is a family affair. How does that work?
Well, the thing is that what I'm getting at is that, you get the martyr figures, and I'm going to take care of everything. And you don't have to worry about anything. I'll take care of mother. And, but the implicit statement very often is, I'm going to get the house. So there's, there's other aspects to that that are undercurrents to it. But, the problem with the martyr figure approach to caregiving is that, you're taking the whole burden on yourself. And very often people run out of gas. And one of the biggest problems with elder abuse is basically a lot of elder abuse. 50% of it is by adult caregivers, and a lot of that is exhaustion and overload. And people providing care need to get respite and need to get breaks, and we need to involve other people in the family in the process too. So I see it more as a family responsibility that we share. And sometimes you're the only adult child, or sometimes you're a spouse and there is no child anywhere nearby, and you wind up with the care willy nilly. I mean, there are circumstances, lots of places where there isn't anybody else to do it.
All right, could I take that two places? Let's. I had a client in last week, and they care for an elderly parent. Still, they have their wits about them. But they refuse to move from the house. The house is in a nice area, but they're kind of imprisoned there because if they open the door, alarm rings at one of the children that's a mile away. So they're afraid to have anybody in for coffee in the morning, and they're afraid to go out and get the newspaper in the morning. And maybe there's a reason here that while they have their mental faculties there, their physical might not be, and if they fell down, etc. What do you do in a case like that? If there's a family council, do you take a vote? Or it seems almost like they're imprisoned in the house.
Well, there's lots of ways to deal with this. And, you can get yourself one of these little alarm things that you can wear on your chest. And if you have a problem or you have a fall or something, you press the button and you can alert a family caregiver. You can alert an organization that will come in and check your situation out. So there are other ways to provide response to emergencies besides, having the person almost psychologically locked into their own house. There's respite care. You can get somebody who will, say, be with the elderly person in the house. When I was a grad student, I lived with a lady who was probably in her late 80s in a lovely mansion in Richmond, Virginia. And I got free housing for a semester or so, and she had somebody living in the house with her. So there are ways to provide a little bit of support and a little bit of protection, as it were, besides to do alarm bells around the place. But if this lady has been having falls or something like that, and that's why the adult child has the alarm system set up, you can understand why they'd be very worried about a parent. But we're now developing more electronic technologies for monitoring behavior that are maybe a little bit more subtle than the alarm bells going off.
All righty, then switch to the second. This time of year, holidays just passed and holiday coming up. We want to have mom and dad or mom or dad over. And they go, no, I'd like you to come to my place. And maybe the siblings are from out of town and they come in, but there is one that's in town that's really kind of taking care of them. And they go, I noticed there's a picture missing. I noticed that there's a figurine missing. Where did it go? You're the only one here. You took it. Why did you take it? Do you ever get in involved with that?
Well, as a matter of fact, this lady that I told you about, whom I lived with, she and her husband, after World War II, had gone over to Europe quite a lot and had brought back some wonderful antiques and whatnots from Austria and places like that. And whenever a niece or a nephew or a grandchild, any member of the family showed up to visit her, she would give them one of these little curios or something out of the house, a picture or something like that. And she said to me, I want to give them these things while I'm alive, so I get the pleasure of giving while I'm alive. And I'd rather do that than have them picking up stuff after I'm gone. And I thought it was a brilliant way of sharing, the lifetime accumulation that she'd put together with members of the family. So I personally think it's better to start distributing it before you die than wait till after you're gone.
Well, for that reason, and of course the financial side of me says the more stuff, the more estate tax potentially.
that's true too. That's another way of looking at it, absolutely. But, the point you're making too, though, is that the adult child who is there all the time, maybe the one that they give the various curios and antiques and whatnots to, and the children who don't visit quite so often, who are out of town, don't get so many of these goodies. And so there are Maybe it's a form of compensation for all the help you're getting from the one who's nearby.
Yeah, I've, again, on my side of the world, where one is providing more than the other after the, you know, finality, they say, well, I deserve more because I saved care expenses and I should get a little bit more than half or a third, depending on however many children. And at that point, it's somebody might say, yeah, depending on how much they want. Or I was the favorite and you two weren't.
Well, you know, I say to people, you absolutely have to do a will. And you don't wait until you're 75 or 85 to do a will. You do the will, you know, as soon as you retire, I want a will right away. I don't want you waiting. And, you know, if you don't have a will as to what's going to happen with your assets, etc., you're strongly increasing the chances of family conflict over your stuff.
And the will can be specific. Somebody's high chair goes to them rather than their brother or sister, or yeah, somebody's letter sweater, or somebody's old car.
Yeah.
And then it's clear.
Well, but the symbolics, you know, the meaning of it to the children, it can be very, very powerful. My mom and her will had left the family home. My father had passed before her to the children who were not living in the village. It was a big family, a big Irish family. But I remember my brother who lived in the village said, does this mean I don't have access to my mother's home and I'm right next door and I'm the only one who doesn't have access to the home? Well, we changed that. We all made a family decision that, yes, of course he should have access to the home. But the point is that it's the meaning of the thing and the emotional impact of the thing that we need to be thinking about. And, you know, in lots of cases, I think it's better to try and give equally to the adult children. But if you have somebody who's done all of the caregiving, then certainly I think that there should be a recognition of that.
You mentioned these communities. My mom lived on a street, post-World War II homes, you know, for the GIs, the small brick homes. And the folks stayed there longer than what they should, but they did stay there. There wasn't this great community, but then it started to turn, and I'm an only child. Mm-hmm. And somebody across the street was hurt, let's say. And my mother said, no, I'm not moving. And I said, you're moving. And had to put her in. that wasn't a pleasant experience, but you're moving, and this is when you're moving, and the house is going to be sold. Now, of course, I can't sell it. But finally, it got through, and she probably said to herself, yeah, maybe he's got a point. Anyway, I understand we have a call. Good morning. Hi there.
Good morning. I just wanted to say thank you so much for the subject matter this morning. I'm very interested in it. I was wondering if Dr. Creek could speak to the impact of exercise on the prevention of falls, and I have a follow-up question.
Yes. Actually, falls prevention is a very important bit of business, and I'm very proud of the fact that my university in our Arizona campus, we're now hitting 2,000 elders in the Mesa, Phoenix area that our students have gone out and educated about falls prevention. And there are programs, by the way, falls prevention education programs at senior centers. Mm-hmm. And perhaps you could call the Area Agency on Aging in your community, whether it's Fairfax County or Montgomery County, or whether it is Loudoun County, mm-hmm, or District of Columbia, they all have an area agency on aging, and they have an information and referral service or an information and assistance service that will be able to tell you where you can get falls prevention education. And the students, my students at the university out there, are going out doing, several classes with seniors at senior centers and in retirement communities to teach them about falls prevention and balance issues. And it's a growing concern. And I'm extremely proud of the students for the work that they do. But there's a program that's been developed by the University of Maine called A Matter of Balance, which is about the business of falls prevention. So if you'd, I would think if you wanted, also AARP has good information about falls prevention education. So I think if your area agency in aging would be the first step I would take to find out what's available locally in terms of falls prevention education. And but there are material, written materials available too.
Wonderful. Could you also give some specifics as to the sources of the research that you earlier cited, like the names of the research study or just...
Well, I've been trotting out numbers left and right here, so I'd better. Which particular study are you asking me about?
Well, you were talking about exercise's impact on aging, and
oh, yes.
That was the number one factor.
Yes. That was the University of Texas School of Public Health in, I think it was in Austin, Texas. But it's the University of Texas School of Public Health, and it's a study that they just completed in the last year. On it was a multi-year study. I'm sorry, I can't pull the name of the senior professor out of my head. Wow. But if you contact University of Texas School of Public Health,
if you could get that, if you could email us, we could pass that along to you. You can email us at nitpinc.com.
Okie doke.
Yeah, we'll get that to you. And thanks for the question, by the way.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for the call. And for anybody else, 202-465-3080. Thus far, we've developed a discussion around what can we do as caregivers, but what if the person we're trying to provide care to doesn't want to hear it? So we get into the tough love position. How tough are we going to be? Or how tough can we be?
Well, you know, actually, what I was thinking about there was that elders should do for themselves what they can do for themselves, even if it's easier and quicker for you to do it for them. And, you know, it's... As we get older, you know, they might take longer to tie our shoelaces, or it may take longer to get dressed, or this, that, the other. But the thing is that if we start taking care of things for them, it's faster and quicker, but they're losing function, and you're abetting the loss of function. And so basically that might require a small bit of patience. You know, in our very busy world, we want to rush it on and get everything done quicker and quicker and quicker.
I wouldn't know about that.
You, not at all. We'd never think of you that way, Bob. Nor would your spouse, I suspect. But the truth is we need to have patience, and we need to allow them the time to get the things done themselves. And we need to maybe, as long as they can do it, they should do it.
Good. But
that's what I'm getting at. But tough love means that you don't do for them what they could possibly do.
And I suppose to the extreme, if they dig their heels in and they're not really aware that they're digging them in, I guess there's a legal recourse, but that, you know, that's heart wrenching and oftentimes antagonizing, maybe with the siblings.
Well, the other thing, too, of course, is that, you know, you can get a very, very stubborn person who, you know, essentially is fighting to hold on to their autonomy when maybe they need to give up a little bit of their autonomy, or they shouldn't be driving. They're starting to get dings and little problems with their cars. My friend Nellie O'Leary drove from County Cork in Ireland, which is where I'm from, in case you wonder where this accent is from. Nellie used to drive herself to church every morning at 6:30 a.m., you know, for daily mass up there in Stamford, Connecticut. And then she finally had a crash or two too many and realized that she shouldn't be doing it anymore. And it's kind of a scary thing when you have a parent who's like, you know, 85 to 90 and they're still driving. And sometimes they can drive quite well, but you start getting the slowness of reaction and things like that, and maybe the visual problems. And sometimes, yes, you have to say to them, "You're creating huge anxiety in my heart. Maybe you need to stop doing this, and maybe you need to protect the lives of children and others by not doing it."
Well, one of the other NITP speakers that talks on your subject, transition planning, has a contract with his son. Now, getting keys away from a male is pretty hard. And his deal is, if he knocks the trash can over more than twice, he has to hand the keys to his son. Now, I'm sure that's not legally binding, but at least he was smart enough to know early on that maybe there'll come a time when the trash can becomes the stopping point.
Well, that's not a bad idea. I kind of like the trash can as the symbolic moment at which you have to give up. But, you know, America, you know, independence is hugely valued in America. The ability to do your thing is an essential American aspiration, right?
Yes.
And you know, the day you get the keys of the car as a teenager is the day that kids celebrate as that's their freedom. And then, you know, you get to be 75, 85. But one-third of people over 75 can't drive anymore. And, you know, and most Americans, seniors, you know, live in suburbs. And, you know, I keep saying to people, you've got to be within reasonable distance of good public transport. Because if you have no other way of getting around, the pressure is there to continue driving if you have no other option. So I really think that, you know, when people are talking about retirement and all of that, that one of the big things they need to be thinking about is there good public transportation in that situation?
Boy, that's scary. I have a short time between now and 75. I better get that car I've always wanted. And I would hope that my spouse is listening to this, so I have your approval.
Well, it depends on what you're lusting after. if it's a modest little chariot, like my personal favorite fantasy is a diesel Jetta. You know, the truth is that we do have to have transportation options as we get older. We need to build transportation options. And, you know, actually, I mentioned to you just before we began, I think, about these communities like Mount Vernon, Virginia, and Reston, Virginia, and Columbia, Maryland, around here in the Washington area, that are building these little kind of networks. Computerized databases of networks of people who will help each other with transportation and help each other with getting the going to the store and all that. And some of these networks are also hiring themselves a part-time nurse or a part-time social worker who will come into the homes and assess people. And the whole purpose of this is to maintain your independence in your own home as long as humanly possible. And I really like that. By the way, I think if you go into WashingtonPost.com/villages, you'll come across a few articles about these communities. And the Post has done a number of articles about these communities. And I think that they're a cutting edge. And actually, at the Gerontological Society in November down in New Orleans, I bumped into a couple of colleagues of mine, a fellow called Andy Sharlock from UCLA, I think, doing a whole bunch of work on what you call villages being developed by seniors to help each other out with maintaining independence.
Interesting you say that. I believe there's a community in above or below Orlando called the Villages, and it's for the young elderly, if you will, and the medium, and I don't know if it goes beyond that, but it's huge, and it maybe people in their middle 60s recognizing that they need to be in a village in the long term, maybe not in the short term, and it's been very successful.
Well, you know, retirement communities and continuum of care communities certainly are a significant option. Of course, in some parts of the country where housing values have gone down and people, we've got 3.5 million senior households right now who are underwater. So, you know, getting into many of these retirement communities, you have to sell the house to have the money to get into the retirement community.
Yeah.
That's another different challenge.
Another one of your commandments here, we've talked an awful lot about an individual providing the services to the elderly parent. But you say, be good to yourself.
Yeah. I often tell my Irish wife that if anything ever happens to me, I'm significantly older than she, that she could drop me off in an adult daycare center a couple of days a week. And they would feed me and take care of my exercise, and they would keep me busy, and she'd get a couple of days off.
I hope she films that.
And my
guess
point,
I want to watch that one.
The point really is, you need breaks. And if you're providing care to an older relative on a full-time basis, or you're the only caregiver, you're the primary caregiver, you'll do it a lot longer, a lot better, if you give yourself opportunities for relaxation, opportunities for downtime. And so the part of tough love is taking care of yourself so that you can take care of them. And that means you got to give yourself breaks and respite care, adult daycare, and resources like that. You know, other members of the family who maybe are not close by but can come for a weekend once a month or every 2 months and take over the visit with mom for a long weekend, that's break time too. And so other members of the family can help with that. Even if they're long-distance caregivers, they can come and visit and they can take over the care a little bit for a while, so you get that break. So I really think you have to build in breaks for yourself, because if you don't, you'll get exhausted. And you know what? That's when people start getting snippy.
Okay.
And start getting, maybe a small bit, abusive with a parent.
The caller earlier, very good questions, but it's one of your commandments. Learn about service resources.
Yes.
So let's say I don't have a clue. Where would I go? I can't say where would I go first. Give me the top two or three.
I'll give you a website called eldercare.gov.
Eldercare.gov.
And actually, eldercare.gov is conducted by the National Association of Area Agencies on Aging, but it's a federally funded program. And it's basically the national network of area agencies on aging throughout our nation. And the Area Agency on Aging system throughout our nation was started by a gentleman called Richard Nixon, who I think one of his best contributions to to older people in America was to start the whole system of area agencies on aging. And each of these has, as I mentioned earlier, an information and assistance program or information referral program. And they have databases and all the resources in that community. And so I think that's my first stop in terms of finding out what's available around here to help with older people. Now, you know, down the street from where we live here, where this building is, there is an absolutely wonderful organization called Iona House. Iona House. And they're providing all kinds of community activities and services and educational programs, etc., and community outreach for elders in this part of Northwest D.C.
Okay, now would that be somewhat commonplace in major cities? Like we're in the Washington, D.C. metro area, but I'm sure people in Denver, L.A., Chicago are listening to this as well.
Area agencies exist everywhere. Every county has one. Okay, some counties in rural America might share one with a couple of counties where the population is sparse. But every part of the country is covered by an area agency in aging.
Wow.
And so that's, I mean, but there are local organizations, for example, I keep giving as an example in Baltimore, there's an organization called the Waxter Center. Well, the Waxter Center in Baltimore, W-A-X-T-E-R, has 11,000 members. There's all kinds of activities going on. There's dance classes, and there's art classes, and there's dental programs, and and you get your shots, and I'm pretty certain there's bingo going on there too. And I just think that's a fantastic resource.
Do you find sometimes with an aging parent or parents where they might be a little reluctant to go to a center like that, and once they go, they don't stop? But how do you get them from home to this activity?
Well, many of these organizations, like Waxter Center and Iona House and so forth, many of them have transportation. They have little buses, and they get people, pick people up. So it's more than one way to skin a cat. You can call them and say, do you happen to have any transportation available? And that's a way to get there, too. By the way, only 10% of American seniors ever go near a senior center. And you ask them, you know, about that, and they say, I'm not one of those old crocs. they don't want to see themselves as one of being one of these frail elders that need support and that. And you've got to be sensitive to that, that allergic reaction. But actually, I think senior centers can be a fantastic resource for older adults. And we need to, and maybe the best way to get them to go is to get somebody in the neighborhood who's already going to invite them to come with them for one visit or to come to some event there.
Would it help if the caregiver went with them a few times?
Yes, it would.
To wean them off or wean them on?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think myself that if get your peers, get somebody in your neighborhood who's going to invite you to go with them is the best way to get them there. But certainly if you're willing to go with them, maybe go to a bingo game there with them, and they'll start meeting some of their buddies, and they'll start seeing that this could be very enjoyable.
Wow. I'm going to take a little tangent off to the finance. And when you told me about that you're an advisor to this major financial firm regarding finances, of course, I'm a finance type. Sometimes the parents don't want to let you know, or they don't even know what the finances are, or better yet, what happens if we could catch it earlier enough so that the money doesn't fly away. I know in one case, the individual was just ordering indiscriminately from these call-in shows, not call-in shows, these TV shows where they, you know, the latest and greatest watch, and they probably had 40 watches. What are you going to do with 40 watches? But it was easy. You just call up and they charge it, and boom, it's done.
Yes.
Paying for it was another issue.
Well, one of the problems we're facing is that the whole scam business is growing like topsy. And the scams artists are based all over the world. And I have a very, very good friend whose dad was a retired military officer, and was widowed and lived a block or two from her, and she was visiting him 6 days a week. And a very smart professional lady. And her daddy was into it, $75,000 with an outfit in Canada before she got onto it. I mean, they told him that he'd won this lottery thing and that they needed the bank account number so they could put the money in. And they needed a social security so they could verify blah, 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 blah. So the poor guy, they had sucked out $75,000 before she got on, and she was visiting every day. I had a lady in a class, and she came up to me and she said, my mom was scammed by a guy in Dublin.
And that's hard to believe.
I said,
they don't have people like that
in
Ireland.
I said, tell me more. And she said, my mom got a phone call. Grandma, I'm in Dublin. I've crashed the car, Grandma. It's going to cost $5,000 to fix the car. Can you send me $5,000, Grandma? And she thought it was one of her grandsons, and she sent $5,000. And then a couple of weeks later, it was another five. And then her daughter came home for a visit, and she told her daughter, and her daughter said, "Mom, you're being scammed." And her mother was totally bereft when she realized what she had done. But point is, the scamming business is growing very rapidly, and we need to alert older adults to be careful about this. And actually, AARP did a little study where they provided telephone information to older adults about scams. And it actually turned out to be relatively effective, at least for a period of time, in terms of scam awareness. But the other reality is that 50% of all this elder financial abuse is by adult children. And 20% of it is by caregivers. And we need to educate older adults about if they have people, you know, going shopping for them and bringing them the food, make sure they bring the bill from the store and you see what the actual amount was.
How about if you're the caregiver? It's a sensitive question to ask, but could I see your checkbook? Can I see where the money's going?
Well, I think that, I think adult children could have a discussion with an older adult about how they're managing their how to manage their assets, and about the fact, certainly about the scams business, but also about the fact of the matter is that that a lot of older adults are ripped off by caregivers and by family members, and you need to be aware of this fact, and you need to kind of start thinking forward for the future. And by the way, apart from a will, maybe you should have somebody with a power of attorney, or you could maybe somebody who's a representative payee in the case of Social Security, if you're not capable of getting to the bank to get your money, somebody can be designated as a representative payee who will be responsible for getting the money for you, and maybe managing the money for you. But then that person has to be appointed by Social Security.
And be bonded.
Well, in Social Security usually appoints a member of the family for that purpose.
Okay, let's take an individual, a parent, that lives in City X. Either there are no children or there's no one to care for them in that city. The children live outside the city or the close relatives, maybe their brothers or sisters. How do you manage this type of care from a distance?
Well, I think myself that, you know, one of the things you need to be doing is sitting down with them to discuss with them their finances. And certainly, you know, you should probably try and set it up so that automatic payment systems for like utilities and things like that are put in place. So you reduce the burden of managing as much as possible. That would be one part of it. And another part of it would be, having somebody with power of attorney who can help them with managing their assets in case anything happens.
This actually happened to a friend, client, and very sharp individual with managing money, engineer. Generally, they're very good at that. And this person was no slouch. Didn't live quite in the area where the kids are. And it went through every penny of the cash. Fortunately, they were a retired Fed, had an annuity. But they didn't have any cash left because, in your example where they sent the $75,000 to collect their lottery winnings, this was same thing, except, you know, send us $50,000 to open the account up and we'll fill it up with $1 million next week. Boom. All of a sudden, no cash. They had to bring the parent back. Again, fortunately, they had enough cash flow to pay for an apartment and food, but wow.
Well, you know, the signs of loss of competence can be like sudden changes in patterns of managing money, and if any sudden changes of behavior, because a stroke can happen when it happens, and sometimes about 50% of cases of loss of mental function are related to strokes, And minor strokes can be very hard to detect. And so if you see loss of some kind of loss of function, then, you know, I really like people to consider getting a geriatric assessment. And a lot of our hospitals and many of our medical schools now have multidisciplinary geriatric assessment teams where they will do a complete assessment of the person and give you baseline information on how to function. The other thing I wanted to mention too is that, like, there are organizations out there, and the Jewish Family Services are particularly good at this, will come into the home and do a home assessment of the status of the person. And I know that I was talking with the Jewish Family Service in Tidewater regarding a friend of mine down there, and they said that they would have a nurse and a social worker come in as a team and visit the person in their home and assess them in the home. And sometimes, you know, you can learn a lot from visiting somebody in their own home and seeing how they're managing in the home that you wouldn't get by in a doctor's office in a 15-minute visit with a doctor.
All right. We've talked about the doctors. We've talked about the exercise. We've talked about finances. How about home adaptation? I'm talking the physical stuff, the rails. How do you get that across?
Well, I brought along with me a little booklet developed by AARP, and it's called the AARP Home Fit Guide. I'll repeat that. The AARP Home Fit Guide. And that's tips and information about how to keep your home viable for you as you go forward. One of the things that I say to people is you can get this kind of a home adaptation kind of menu from Home Depot, or you can get it from your area agency in aging, or you can get it from AARP, and you go into that house and you check off the boxes when you visit your mom or your dad. And you got to have the support bars in the bathtub at retirement, not after the fracture. And you got to get rid of shag rugs as people get older. Older ladies, shag rugs are dangerous things in the floor. And a little thing called knobs. Have you ever followed your mother around the house turning off faucets because they can't do the knobs anymore? Well, levers are a whole lot better as we get older. So maybe we need to replace the knobs with levers. And can you put a bedroom and a bathroom on the main floor? That might be the thing that pushes you out of that house faster than anything else if you can't put a bedroom and a bathroom on the main floor. The AARP Home Fit Guide has a lot more information than that in it. But it's a very nice little booklet, and I strongly recommend it to people.
Got more than a few pages.
Yes, but it's got illustrations and whatnot, so it's excellent, and I'd recommend that to people.
Okay, and for the people that say, "Listen, maybe I'm going to be in that situation, maybe I'm not, but what could I do as a minimal thing now?" Maybe I don't like looking at the bars on the bathtub, but I could live with that. And the levers, I could live with that.
Yeah, well, you know what you also need to do, too, is you need to maybe you might need to put rails on the steps from the front door. I did a study one time in Dallas, Texas, on bus transportation and the elderly with a couple of colleagues. And one of the things that was stuck in my head was how important to these old people was that the bus become close to the curb so they wouldn't have to step down off the curb to step up into the bus, that little 6 inches made a big difference to their ability to get on and off buses if the bus would come in close to the curb. So we were trying to figure out from them what would they be advising bus drivers to do to make it easier and better for them to get on buses and use buses. And that was one of the things many of them said to us. Get them to come closer to the curb. So there are some extremely practical things that can be done, like rails. If you have steps to the front door, then you got to put a rail with it so people can have something to support them as they go up and down steps. But if you're going to move, then I think there's a two words that I like to use, and that's universal design. And universal design means the door is a bit wider. There are no steps to the front door or the side. There's at least one entrance without any steps. And there's glare protection in the windows. And the electric sockets are a little bit higher. And the bathroom is set up so you, if you ever get into a wheelchair, you can roll right in there and into the shower unit and get your own shower and do your own thing without having to get a lot of outside help.
Yeah, I've seen vanities in bathrooms now higher, not necessarily for the elderly, but just people don't want to bend over and it's
well,
higher.
You know, universal design is basically to reduce the whole idea of barriers to independent living. And so I think whether it's a townhouse or, you know, the house you've been in is too big and or the children have gone or your spouse has gone to God or something, well, maybe something smaller might actually suit very well. But make sure it is universal design.
Okay. I think you have a note there.
Yes. Yes. Well, you know, the question that another question that gets raised is about giving to charity and all of that. And I had a fella came in to visit me, and in my office one time at the National Council on the Aging at that particular period of my life, and he said he'd visited his mom up in Pennsylvania, and there was a pile of envelopes on the table, the kitchen table. So he started going through these. Well, it turned out that some Republican group in Ronald Reagan's time had sent them a letter asking for money. And it was signed Ronald Reagan. And the lady thought that Ronnie Reagan needed her help to run America. So she sent money. And next thing, every group that was affiliated with that Republican organization was asking for money. So you do have to be careful about gift giving. But yes, that's an important issue.
Okay, we have 1 minute. Final comments, please.
Well, it seems to me that we're going to have, we have now got 43 million over 65. We're heading towards 80 million. And the fastest growing age group is 85 plus. And the great thing is that more and more people are living longer, healthier lives and doing their thing later and later in life. And that's fantastic.
And it's fantastic that they have somebody like you around to pass the word along.
Okay.
Thanks for coming in, Michael.
Well, it's been a pleasure
to
be with you. Look
forward to the next. Happy holidays to the rest. And we'll be back next week. Andrew, are you going to be here next week?
Yes.
And we should be on with Mike Causey and Tammy Flanagan to kind of do a year-end wrap-up and look forward into the next year. Thanks for listening and talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP. Please tune in next Monday at 10 a.m. for a topic solely devoted to you, the federal employee. The show can also be heard 24/7 on federalnewsradio.com. Thanks for listening.